This episode of Own the Gray is brought to you by I Am. Discover your unique talents, realize your potential, and align to your path. Take the first step to uncover your life purpose by visiting deborahjones.ca/courses. Would you change your diet if you could eat brownies for breakfast? Well, that's what my next guest is suggesting we do. Lynn Bowman is an active, vibrant, and healthy 75-year-old with a lifetime of stories with important messages to share. One of these messages is, breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, dinner like a pauper. Advice first given by Adele Davis, one of the best-known authorities on nutrition, who also coined the phrase, you are what you eat. My next guest is suggesting we stop being pigs and try being a sweet potato instead. Listen in on our lively conversation about why you should eat your veggies. Welcome to Own the Gray, a podcast to dispel the notion that aging is undesirable and setting new positive attitudes. I'm Deborah Jones, and I believe you can be vibrant and healthy throughout the best years of your life. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. You know, I'm like a little kid, Deborah. I'm always thrilled when it actually works. You know, I'm meeting amazing, wonderful people, and I know you'll be among those. It's just the sweetest thing. I mean, I'm the person who's been crabby about social media and oh my God, and so on. But podcasting has been a blast. It's fun.
It is. It is. It's just like having a conversation, going for coffee or something, right?
But with new people that we never would have met. Never. Yeah. And people that we really like and people who are doing what we're doing. But also, we've all been locked in our homes for a year and a half, right? So
it's our way of getting out and about, isn't it?
It is. And it's kind of magic. How did you get started doing this?
I've been working one-on-one with people for years, and I realized that I need my voice to spread further. And I didn't know how to do that. So I wrote a book first and foremost. So that was something that would get the word out there. And then the podcast was really an extension of me going into uncharted territory. You know, I thought, well, let's just do it. Let's just do it. And plus my idea of getting older, and I didn't like what society has offered for us as we get older. And it's like, well, this is wrong. I need to do something about this so that when I need the services, when I need society support for my own life, then hopefully it'll be a better circumstance.
It's wonderful. But you look like a child to me.
Thanks.
I mean, you're going to talk about getting old? Okay. I think maybe that might be my department a little bit.
Well, I'm considered a senior now at 55. So
Stop.
And I'm letting the gray show through when I used to pluck them all out. So,
okay. And I apologize for the hat, but, and it's the University of Nevada at Reno Wolfpack.
Cool.
My new grandson's name is Wolf, and he lives in Reno.
Oh, nice.
He's 3 weeks old. So just saying, grandma bragging there.
It's so perfect.
But for you, my dear, I cut my workout short by 5 minutes. So
why? Thank you.
You're welcome. I did that for you. And I don't do that for just anybody because I love my workout. We have this great little studio that is in a gal's garage, but she's totally fitted it out with, and she's a longtime professional, accomplished trainer, but she's rethought everything beautifully for a mind-body kind of expression of a workout. And most of her clients are my age, maybe a little younger. So it's just absolutely, it fills my heart every time I go to be with these other women.
Yep.
And I love talking about it. And it's part of what you're saying. I'm sorry, I'm in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
And you know, you need to work at that. You need to do that.
Yep.
But it's also just absolutely the best social. And of course, okay, let's admit this. It's my only social life. You, my podcasting, and my workout is kind of it these days, but it's great. I love it.
Awesome. That's awesome. I love that we're having this chat going into it, because there's so much stigma around getting older that the people that I've been talking to, they don't fit into that category. So what is that category now, right?
It's BS. It's it's all media created, but also it's a societal shift, Deborah, isn't it? I mean, my grandmother looked like you expected a grandmother to look in the 50s and the 60s. But that's not how grandmothers look anymore. That's not how they live. That's not how they talk anymore. 50 years have gone by, 60 years, you know, and we need to update this a little bit. And I love talking about it. To me, it's endlessly fascinating, partly because I wake up every morning and go, I'm 75. Okay, cool. Right? What am I going to do? What trouble am I going to get into today?
I love that.
Well, and the private joke was that I wanted to become a 9-year-old boy, you know, cut my hair off and have the freedom that kids have before life overwhelms them in school and their sexuality and all this stuff. I mean, when you watch 7, 8, 9-year-olds, they have competence, they have agency and strength, but they don't have all the crap weighing them down. Yeah. And so as far as I'm concerned, that's how age, let's look at it that way. We get to shed all this stuff and just come out of it in our workout clothes. Going everywhere in our great tennies, in our leg warmers, in our Wolfpack hats. And
I love it.
What's wrong with that?
I love it. Well, okay. So your friends that are around your age, do they see the world the same way as you do?
Largely. And let me say, I live in California. So, we're always accused of being a little weird, a little different. And I'm a native Californian. And my mother was a native Californian. So we do maybe look through a slightly different lens. I'm surrounded by people who are health conscious. Yeah. And I'm in the middle. I live about 35 miles south of San Francisco. And it's an agricultural area. And it's an area full of kind of the new ag, the farmers who are rediscovering the dirt as being our most precious element. And we talk a lot about whole food and bringing the ecosystem back to balance and health and all these things. So I don't know if I were in the middle of Alabama or Iowa, maybe it would be different. And I've had friends say, oh my gosh, it's shocking to get off a plane in Cleveland and see what people look like. Because I think in especially some parts of California, we're outdoors a lot. You know, this is kind of a haven for hiking and biking and water sports and so on. Mm-hmm. So good question, but I feel like I'm surrounded by supportive people. I mean, first of all, nobody messes with me, Deborah.
<It's>
we're the new babushka. Do you know what I mean by that expression?
Well, babushka, the sort of the grandmother.
Yes. And my son spent some time in Russia and came home just so impressed that these old ladies out on the sidewalk would take their broom and just chase after people if they literally, and they did this stuff. He said they were really scary, man. They were really mean. And I thought, okay, sounds good to me. So we're the new babushka in our workout clothes.
Getting older, and what I've discovered in my older years
is... Yeah, no, you got to stop saying it.
Yeah. Well, what I've discovered is that we start to not care so much about behaving and the constrictions that are put on us by society and by our upbringing and the things that we're being shown on television as to what an older person is supposed to do. But the idea of getting older, and I think this happens around age 50, is that something happens to us that we start to realize, I can take up space in the world now. I can be me now. Did that happen to you at 50, or has it always been like that?
It's a great question. And it's one that's on my mind, because I've had this thought lately that I spent the first 30 years of my adult life working my buns off. I mean, I worked like a crazy lady. I was a single mother. I had three little kids. And back in the day, you talk about taking up space and so on. I worked in a man's world largely, and I was often the only woman in the room. So I had to create literally this persona that I would bring to work every day. And it involved getting up at 5 a.m. and putting on a full set of lashes, upper and lower, and, you know, pulling the outfit out and doing all. And meanwhile, I had three little ones fighting in the other room. I couldn't even tell people I had kids. You didn't, because you were not taken seriously as a professional if you had children. You know, it just wasn't. And I want to bring everybody back to in 1964, when I graduated from high school, I couldn't get into Harvard and this, because they were not co-ed. That's how old I am. It was such, and the help wanted ads, which was how we used to get jobs, were help wanted men and help wanted women.
Wow.
So right there.
Yeah.
Right. Huge. But because of time and circumstance and good luck and bad luck, I wound up a desperate single mother in 1980 in the Silicon Valley. And they were so needing talent. They were so desperate for somebody who would do this new industry, this new kind of work. And of course, I raised my hand. It's like, yes, sir. What would you like today? And I had happily, I was willing to do technical stuff, even though I didn't have an engineering degree. And that wasn't where I had been headed in my life. I knew how to sell stuff. I knew how to write advertising copy and do layouts and stuff. So I went to work for these Silicon Valley companies, helping them sell their new technologies. And I ended up being the one in the room saying, you know, I see that you think this is really powerful and wonderful and so on, but who cares? Who's going to use it? What does it do? And they'd be like, oh, okay. But the good news for me was that I was making 2 or 3 times the money that I had ever made doing this work before for consumer goods. Right. And now I was doing computers and software. So it was luck to land in a place where there was demand and where I could get in the room, where it was just, they didn't throw me out because I was a girl.
Yeah.
There was a lot of, well, who's the girl? But then somebody would say, well, it's okay. She's, you know, she's going to write this stuff and she's. So for 30 years, that was largely my career. That took me to 50, Deborah, the number that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And when I was 50, my husband and I bought this old broken down farm on the coast of California, 140-year-old house. We both were smitten. We didn't even go in. We just said, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You know, the light was beautiful and there were the redwoods and so on. And this was both of our dream. And so at 50, I started a new life in this little funny town on the coast and started looking for my horse because I was going to be able to have a menopausal horse, which I was thrilled about. My kids. And I recommend that for everybody. Well, we talked about healing, right?
Yeah.
And that's a whole other subject because, you know, horses have this magic. They have these huge hearts.
Yeah.
And when you are in sync with a horse, when you're next to a horse and connected to a horse, literally your heart reflects what her heart is doing and vice versa. And you feel each other at this deep sort of mixed species level that is, it's magical.
Yeah. It's called coherence. So, yeah.
Yeah. So 50, and now I'm 75. So 25 years have gone by, and I've done this community work and school board and foundation stuff, and did the house, and I wrote a couple books with my friend. And now all of a sudden, though, at 75, this whole new world opens up. But it involves me making a shift, a conscious shift from who I was, you know, or what I was doing or what I thought of myself. And also taking all those skills, talents, whatever it was that got me this far, and then and having an opportunity to do something really new with them. And what's better than that?
Yeah, that's exciting.
And the cool thing about being this age is you don't care what people say, right? Who does she think she is or whatever, or you get a bad review. And you're talking about putting yourself out there. And yes, it can be a challenge. Yeah. Fortunately, I was always cheeky. I was always, you know, had a bit of a mean streak. So, but, and I hear from so many women who, how do you get your courage, you know, and where do you get your confidence? Because so many women have been in the box that you're talking about, where you feel like you can't occupy more space than you're allowed to occupy. And I think because I was a young single mother determined to raise my children not in poverty, I was determined that my kids were going to be fine, even though I had this crazy life going on and a crazy ex chasing me all over the country. Mm-hmm. Another story, next book.
Okay.
But I had to get kind of tough kind of early just to get through.
Yeah.
And at the time, if you'd said, oh, Lynn, you know, you'll be grateful for having gone through this because it's making you a stronger person, you know. I know I didn't want to hear that then, but in fact, guess what? It does. It makes you, if you survive.
Yeah.
And we all don't, you know, which is another thing we learn in life, the older we get, is that a lot of us don't make it.
Yeah.
It's a crapshoot.
You know, the things that you're doing today, the things that I'm doing today, we're doing it because we're alive, because we've got life to live, and because we've got hope for our future. We're moving towards our own future, right?
Yes.
So we're not just surviving. But I do know that there are some people that are just living one day at a time. And so I think there's two schools of people out there as you get older. And I think society has played a big part in that, in the fact that there's no role model.
You're a healer.
Yep.
And I never thought I would say this, but I'm starting to think of myself as being a healer too. You know, there are all kinds of different ways to heal. And I am so happy to be old enough to see us females coming into our own as the wisdom in the community, because we've just come through a period in history where we did not have a seat literally at the table, mm-hmm. where society was missing out on more than half of its brains and wisdom. Yeah. And I was joking the other day, as a result, as you know, I'm a grandmother recently again of a baby boy. And I thought to myself, we should never again elect or appoint anybody to any kind of office who hasn't stayed up all night with a baby who's crying, who hasn't changed diapers, who hasn't scrubbed unspeakable stuff off of a floor and then tried to dress. You know, these are skills that we can laugh about it, but that's where humility comes from, right? That's where mm-hmm. grace comes from. And if you've lived a life where you've had people waiting on you and letting you do your awful things that you do and don't apologize for them and so on, we women see things a different way. You know, we've most of us, whether we've been mothers or not, we've been caregivers in some form. Mm-hmm. And being a caregiver in any form rounds your soul out, doesn't it? It's what we all are to each other, whether we want to be or not. Either you step up and do it, or you fail as a human being.
Well, the caregiving aspect to being in control of people's lives, if you don't have that caregiving muscle, I guess, if you don't have a focus on taking care of others, how could you possibly be in a position to make choices and decisions for people?
Thank you. How?
Yeah.
And how in the world could you be focused on literally killing people when what we need to be doing is figuring out food and figuring out climate and figuring out health? It's just, it's so obvious. It's right out there in front of us. And, and ladies, and I love men. I'm married to a man and I am a mother of a man and I'm now grandmother of a little guy. And we have been so segregated gender-wise, and look at all the people we've missed, magical people who don't fit either, you know, of the binary boxes that we have for sexes, all those people in that range in between who have so much to give. And we as a culture said, no, I know you're brilliant. I know you've got, go away. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, it makes no sense.
It makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
No sense. But
when I heard the Dalai Lama saying the world will be saved by the Western woman, that was my war cry.
Right? Really? Like, the Dalai Lama said that?
He said that. And so I thought, well, I'm a Western woman, so I guess he's talking about me. So I better get my act together and start to make a difference.
Okay. I mean, you know, I think in our sort of humble way, we might be making a difference. But my mission for myself is to keep myself healthy and strong and to keep using my voice. If people want to listen, I want to tell them. And I have this book out, Brownies for Breakfast, and it has a kind of glib title. But my mission is to keep people from being taken down by chronic disease. We have a whole country of people who are eating crap, who are poisoning themselves, literally, and poisoning their children and poisoning their elders. they're putting them in unreasonably expensive places to live where they're fed horrible food.
Yep.
And hospitals in this country are, I mean, if you're someone who's conscious about food, about nutrition, and you want to really be shocked, go and see what the options are at your nearest large hospital.
Right. And it's not even an option. It's like, here, eat this.
Yeah, it's horrible. And because they're for-profit hospitals in this country. So one way to save money is just to feed people crap. My book is about bringing good food back to hopefully your home and your table and trying to get you to stop eating in the car. I don't want you eating in the car. And yes, I eat in the car too, because we have to, but what I eat in the car are little vegan, wonderful little snacks that come in a little bag because they're a good form factor for driving. But so many people have given up the table. They're no longer sitting at the table with their children, with their spouse, with their parents. And to me, culture-wise, that's where the magic happens. And yes, you know, I want your food to be yummy and good and so on, but I also want you looking at each other at the table. I want you talking at the table.
Yes,
we've given this up literally. And this is one of those sneaky things that happens in society where you go, wait, iPhones, That's changed. It's only been, look at us now and look at the picture of us 20 years ago. Wow. So yeah. Different.
Yeah.
And food is a huge part of this sea change that is taking us not to a good place. And so there is a revolution going on. I'm part of it.
Yay.
And, yay. And
a crusade.
A crusade. And so I want no one to have a chronic disease unless it's one of the few chronic diseases that you really cannot help. But things like diabetes and heart disease, the data tells us that 80% of it is preventable. 80% of it, you know, give or take, maybe it's 83%, maybe it's 79. Mm-hmm. Look it up. The data is out there, very public. This is all because you're eating crap and you're not moving and you're stressed and you're not sleeping.
And was that why you were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes? Was that your lifestyle at the time?
I was one of the exceptions. I was a woman who had what they call gestational diabetes. And it's typically diagnosed when you have really large babies or, you know, nowadays they test your blood sugar routinely. In 1975, when my son was born, this wasn't done. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden here I am 5'4", you know, and I've gained 60 pounds with this pregnancy and I give birth to a 10 pound baby boy. And so the doctors went, there was something amiss here. Yes, I had gestational diabetes, but they missed it. And now, happily, women are tested more routinely and they don't let you go 6 weeks overdue as I was. And they don't let your baby get to 10 pounds if you obviously cannot deliver that baby. So, and also credit that to female OBs. We love them. You know, most of the doctors in the hospitals now delivering babies are women. What a difference. What a difference.
There's the caretaker aspect.
Oh my gosh. I just went through this with my daughter and then the lactation consultants, these angels. Where were you girls in 1975? Where were you? We got sent home with babies. It's like, okay, good luck.
Yeah.
Wait, you know, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have podcasts. We didn't even have, I didn't have a mom. She had passed away when I was 18. So literally, I went home with this very large baby who fortunately slept a lot because he was so big. And I didn't have a clue, not a clue. And now women, and if there are any male OBs out there, write me an angry letter. Great. I want to start a dialogue. But women have begun to give each other really high quality health care in the birthing process. And midwives, when my daughter gave birth to my first grandchild, granddaughter, I got to be in the room watching that midwife do her thing. And I wanted to fall on my knees. This was beautiful, so tenderly and gracefully, and with such experience and such skill, did this woman pull my granddaughter Helen out of her mother's body. It, you know, brings tears to my eyes thinking about it. It was so gentle and graceful and skillful. That's how birth can be now, because we women are elevating each other and teaming up. And now the Dalai Lama is on our side. What?
It's about time.
It's about time. I love it. That's just great to hear.
Yeah, let's get back to now that you've got this 10-pound baby, you've been diagnosed with gestational diabetes, right. And I assume at the time there's no information really for
Zero.
You out there.
Zero. And so what they told me was, well, when you're in your 40s, you'll probably develop full-blown type 2 diabetes. Good luck, honey. Bye-bye. And so for years, I tried to get information, you know, and I looked things up and I found a couple of books and, and most women have the experience of the doctors that, you know, end up being your OBs, your gynecologist. That's, and we're going back for our pap smears and so on. So I would ask, do you want to test me? No, no, honey, you're not overweight. You look fine. You're good. And then finally into my 40s, I said, can't somebody just give me a blood glucose test, and it's a hemoglobin A1C test that I'm talking about, which is the test that reveals your blood sugar level over a period of weeks. So it's not just what is happening today. Mm-hmm. It's your averages. And finally, I got a doc to test me, and guess what? I was diabetic, which, folks, that's when you want to know. You don't want to know when you're in your 50s and 60s and 70s because there are no symptoms. You don't have any obvious symptoms. So you have no reason to go, oh, I think I'm diabetic. Mm-hmm. It's just a routine thing that you should have looked at. But you can have type 2 diabetes for years asymptomatically, and it's doing damage that whole time. It's damaging your internal organs. It's damaging your nervous system. So by the time you have a symptom, it's way late in the game. It's very difficult mm-hmm. to rebuild any of that and come back. However, if you know early enough, you can either control it, as I've done, or reverse it. Some people would say, well, you've kind of reversed it. Well, kind of, because I need the only medication that I take is metformin, which is actually a longevity drug there now. There's a lot of talk out there and in a lot of other ways, in addition to just keeping your blood sugar under better control. So on my list of, because I'm probably like you, is I don't want to take any drugs if I have to really be convinced
yeah.
that pill is going to help me before I open my mouth. And I take that at night, once a day. And I stay in pretty good control. And of course, then I exercise. And then the thing that I wrote this book about is it's all about how you eat, but it's not necessarily how the American Diabetes Association tells you how to eat or has mm-hmm. been for years. I always thought it was just carbs. That's kind of, it's like, well, you just need to limit your carbs. So for a long time, I ate a lot of meat, and not a lot of potatoes and not a lot of pasta. That was my way. And, you know, that's not a bad place to be necessarily. I tried to keep my weight under control. And that's another thing that they always said about diabetes. If you keep your weight down, you will control your diabetes, which there's some truth to that. But did any of them have any idea how you were going to keep your weight down? No.
Yeah, there's a lot of hidden sugar in so many foods. And I think that's part of the thing that's coming out now is that, you know, the name of sucralose and yes. You know, all the different names for sugar that yes. are in the food. So even if you're looking at the labels and you're seeing sugar might be in there, but it's all the things that don't sound like real food, that there could be hidden sugars in all of those things too, right?
Absolutely. And I spend two pages in this book, Brownies for Breakfast, showing how to read a nutrition label. A lot of research behind this. This is science-based. It goes back a while. Colin Campbell, you may have heard of him in your work as a nutrition sort of grandfather, founder of some of the good science that's out. The nutrition values that are on those labels are very approximate. They are not reliable. And just let me mm-hmm. illustrate it this way. Let's take two carrots that are grown in two different farms with two different kinds of dirt from two different farmers who use two different kinds of seeds. One's organic, one's not. You pull those carrots out of the ground, those are not the same food.
Right.
In no way do those carrots have the same amount of protein and the same amount of vitamin A and the same. They don't. Not only that, but it can vary like 1 to 8. Huge variations. Any testing that's been done on food labels comes back with, it was kind of close in some ways, but but those are not hard and fast numbers. And you talk about sugar. I spend pages in the book talking about all of the names that they give on these labels, and what is good and what isn't. In other words, I really feel like people don't know, and I want them to know, that there are fabulous sugar replacements out there now. You can get good tasting sugar replacements that absolutely don't give you any kind of response in your body like sugar does. Also, we talk a lot about sugar is addictive. It's more addictive than heroin. And sugar alone is the cause of a huge number of the chronic diseases. And dentists now are saying, please put down your Frappuccino, you know, coffee thing. You're carrying this thing around all day full of sugar and milk has sugar in it as well. And you've got it against your teeth, and they're going in and their dentists are having to tell them that the teeth need to come out because of your coffee drink.
Wow.
Get a hold of that. So understanding what is in your food is major. That's huge. And this book, I dedicate a good amount of time to that because it's a whole food, plant-based way of eating. And I want to go back and tell you a story, if I can.
Yeah.
You talk about how did you kind of get on this path? I wanted to write this book. I had the book about half written about the carbs and the recipes and the how to eat healthy. I went to a conference in Oakland, California. Now, why did I go to this conference of 1,000 MDs from all over the world? I'm not an MD. I just took it. It's some kind of message from somewhere. I said, go to the conference. I spent money that I ordinarily would not have spent and assigned time that I would not. And I went to this conference. And furthermore, I had to sit in front of PowerPoints from 8 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night. Now, I know from your expression, this is torture, right? PowerPoints. Ew. But this was all the latest data and more data and still more data from all over the world. These were all scientists, all MDs, talking about nutrition, food, and healing. And many of them were surgeons. And the most compelling stories of all were these guys and women who were cutting open 8-9-year-old kids for various surgeries that they needed and finding their veins full of plaque at the age of 8 or 9.
Wow.
And you know that that means that they had a huge amount of fat in their diet. And furthermore, it's particularly animal fat. Mm-hmm. So these folks from all over the world had come together to tell us diabetics and people who treat diabetics and other chronic diseases that it's not carbs. Yes, it's quality of your carbs. If you're eating crappy carbs, processed food, yes, that's bad, 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 for reasons which we can go into in more detail. One being, people understand that processed flour is higher on the glycemic scale than sugar in some cases. And the glycemic scale is how you measure how quickly your blood glucose is affected by the food that you eat. And so just avoiding sugar that says sugar isn't enough. Processed white food, flours, and rice is extremely high glycemic, especially processed rices. So back to the conference and me sitting in front of these PowerPoints all day, I got it. It was quite an epiphany for someone who had never met a pork chop that she didn't like or a steak. And my husband picks me up after this is all done. He's going to drive me home. I get in the car and I said that thing that women know throws terror in the hearts of their partners, which was, guess what? He said, what?
Yeah.
I said, I'm a vegan now. And he said, okay, I'm in. For 6 months, I did an experiment on myself, being the only person really that I had available, and my husband. Mm-hmm. I had just had my blood work done. And so for 6 months, I did not eat no dairy, no animal product whatsoever. And I don't eat sugar anyway. So that was already off the table. And so at the end of 6 months, I got my hemoglobin A1C test again. And guess what? I had lowered it by 3 points. And I went back to my physician, as I do regularly. And I recommend that. You should be seen. And you men, you're the worst if you're listening. Yes, you have to go. I know you're strong and everything, but you need to be seen. I went back to my physician, who I argued with all the time. And she said, okay, I'm looking at these test results. She said, Lynn, this just doesn't happen in people your age. I said, but look, it just did. Oh, yeah. That's the power of plant-based whole food nutrition. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. So I still don't eat any meat at all. I don't eat any dairy. I mean, and the only heartbreaking thing, people say, don't you miss it? Well, you know what? If you waved a certain cheese from France under my nose and there was only a tiny bit of it and so on, okay, but that's not what I am exposed to every day in the food that we eat here. Mm-hmm. And I can't, COVID, we can't go anywhere and eat anyway, right? but I don't eat meat anymore. We do eat salmon and shrimp. We live on the coast. We get very fresh, local, wild-caught seafood. And so I do eat that. And the research is that, you know, it's good for you. Salmon is really good for you. You get, you know, the vitamin D's that you don't get in other places. And I happen to really love it. And so that's my personal takeaway from all of it. And in my book, I give one recipe that I call Simple Simon for all of us who don't want to cook something and stink the whole house up. It's so easy to make salmon the right way, not overcook it. It's delicious. It's not inexpensive these days, but then what is?
Yeah.
So that's how I eat, and that's how I'm staying healthy, and that's how apparently a lot of other people are living to quite an old age and staying healthy. And the thing too about chronic disease, and you know this, Deborah, is it's not just what it costs you. You being sick, it costs your family an enormous amount emotionally, and it can break you, not so much in Canada, but in the United States, it will break you financially. The healthcare is unbelievably costly. Medications, it's crazy. I'm hoping our revolution, you and me, the babushkas, we will eventually get this fixed, but you know, my dad, back in the day, my mom died when I was 18 and she'd been ill for a long time. She had kidney disease, which she couldn't have helped. And she finally succumbed when she was in her 40s. I was 18. But meanwhile, you know, there's this emotional burden a family bears. And then our whole family had to go different directions. And my dad sold the house and the dog had to be given away. And it's a bomb, a ticking time bomb in your family. And then when it explodes, it's really horrible. So people don't always think about, you know, people tend to think, well, I'm dealing with this. This is my, no. Other people will need to care for you. Somebody's going to need to pay for this. And the answer is if you will eat your vegetables. Can you do that?
I love it.
I promise you that I and other people can make that pleasant and wonderful for you. Eating vegetables does not have to be punishment. It's lovely. I mean, my plates are gorgeous. They're full of color. They're full of texture and shape. You know, spending your life eating a brown blob and a white blob on a plate is not anything I want to wish on anybody.
I've read some of the reviews from people that have read the book, and they're talking about how beautiful the photographs are and how that there's so much humor also in the stories that you tell in the book. So changing your diet for a lot of people is something that is is challenging because we're wired to go to the familiar. So if we take what you've said and we realize that we've got to start taking care of our health, how do we do this? And there's a lot of information out there, but it's information. And as you said, like with the PowerPoint information, I mean, you can read to your heart's content, but your heart is not content. You know, you eat with your eyes. It needs to look beautiful. And I've seen some of the photographs in your book, and you've even got donuts sprinkled with something all over.
Yes. And
tell us what that is.
Well, what it is, you know, who is going to turn down a donut with pink frosting and sprinkles, right? Your five-year-old, you give your five, here's your breakfast, honey. Is your five-year-old going to go, ew? No. Do they need to know that that donut is full of nutrition, full of protein, is a full meal? No. All they know is it looks like a donut. It's got pink frosting on it and sprinkles. And the same goes for your 85-year-old, your dad.
Yeah.
you know, you offer this to someone, but for Pete's sake, don't say it's sugar-free. It's made with pumpkin. It's made with egg substitute that's really good for you. It's made with nut butter. Don't tell them any of that. Just give them the brownie.
Yeah.
Give them that gorgeous brownie with the frosting on top. And watch as they eat it with delight and then go, so what'd you think? How do you like my brownie? Don't spoil it by saying it's sugar-free. It's high protein. These things are made. I use pumpkin a lot.
Right.
Pumpkin is this amazing magic substitute for flour and oil. And if you combine pumpkin and chocolate, for example, and in my case, I like to use a little cinnamon with that in the brownie. You're eating a vegetable. You're eating a brownie that's almost entirely nuts and pumpkin. And it's as I swear, they're better. And they get better in the fridge, by the way. And you can freeze them. They're wonderful. And who doesn't love a brownie? But that's breakfast or dinner, you know. And also, you don't have to eat three meals a day. We kind of culturally, where did that even come from? You don't need to sit down and stuff your face three times a day. You can have a nice little breakfast, a couple of donuts, my donuts or brownies. And then you can have a lovely meal in the middle of the day at some point. And then you can have something very light early evening. I also talk in the book a lot about timing your meals because we now know there's a huge difference in how your body responds to food based on when you ingest it.
Interesting. Now,
you're not going to like this because, and this is also according to Ayurvedic tradition, this is not a new idea, but over thousands of years, people have discovered, and this has now been confirmed with a lot of research, you really should stop eating at 4 PM, 5 latest. Done. Not one bite after that, if you could possibly manage. No booze, no drinks, non-caloric after that. And the reason is because your digestive system is active in the middle of the day. It's with you when you're out doing your work and catching food, and picking things, your berries out in the woods. In the middle of the day, you're on fire. When the sun is high, you are on fire. And I'm using the Ayurvedic language because I love it. It's so poetic.
Me too.
as the day wanes, your body goes, okay, thanks. That was good. And it wants to move on to other things. What your body does at night is a whole different set of things than what it does during the day. I mean, yes, you breathe and your heart beats and so on. But another thing that comes as a shock to people, and I want people to know, is that your body cannot heal unless it is in deepest sleep. That's when your body, that's when all the shovels and picks come out in your brain and throughout your body to fix the cells and fix the circulation and do that stuff. That crew is working only when you're asleep. And especially the hard part is done when you're in deep sleep. So you can't sleep deeply if you've been eating before you go to sleep. Because your body goes, oh, dang, we have to digest that now. So, okay, cleanup crew, healing crew, stand by. We'll have to digest this stuff. And of course, if you're still sitting in front of the TV eating Doritos and drinking a beer at 11 o'clock at night, the standby crew can't come do the work. They can't. They have to go away. So it's extremely important, if you possibly can, especially those of us of a certain age, to rejigger your timing so that you're, I mean, eat what you want for a late lunch, especially 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon. Eat plenty. Eat what you want for breakfast, assuming it's all good food out of my book. Eat as much of it as you want, but cool it at night. Because people, you every day, and you're hearing this from your patients, I'm sure. I can't sleep. I have insomnia. I pace all night. I wake up at 4. I can't sleep. It's horrendous, the number of people. And you cannot function at a high level if you're not getting sleep. You just can't.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I really love that, the idea, the visual of that crew that wants to do all the healing, and they're just sort of just waiting around, you know, on their iPhones, just waiting for you to
get
say,
that hamburger out of here. We can't do a thing. Yeah,
exactly. That's awesome. I'm so excited that we had a chance to talk today. So if people want to get your book, where is your book available?
It's if you have an independent bookstore that you buy from, and I encourage that, please ask for it there. They will get it for you from their wholesaler, Ingram Spark. I think they can get it pretty quick. You can buy it on Amazon, at Walmart, at Target. And if you don't see it, please ask for it. That helps me and helps get the book out there too. But if you need it today, get it from Amazon. And you can also get, you can download it first and take a look if you want. And then I hope you'll get the hardback or paperback to keep in your kitchen. I worked hard to make it a beautiful book, and I'm proud that a lot of people have responded to the appearance of the book, because the message is food is beautiful. And it smells great, and it's fun. And food isn't just food. Food is about communion with your family, with your friends. And so think about it that way. Please don't think about it as just jamming something down your throat as you sit in a parking lot somewhere or on the freeway. I want you to enjoy every minute of it. And I want you to enjoy the book. So yeah, it's, I made it to be read, to be fun. And I hope you enjoy it. And I love hearing from people. I love getting pictures of people making the recipes in their own way and serving them in their own way. That's super fun for me. So I hope you'll do that. And beautiful. Lynn at lynnbowman.com. If you have questions, want to send me anything, I'm on Facebook and Instagram and everywhere. LinkedIn. Am I forgetting anything?
they can find all of that on your website. Yes. I'll put a link in the show notes with your website and a link to the Amazon. But yes, do find it in your local independent bookstore for sure. Yes. Keep everybody in business again these days.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Lynn. It's been a blast.
I'm so happy to connect with you, Deborah. This is great.
As famous nutritionist Dr. T. Colin Campbell said, good health is about being able to fully enjoy the time we do have. It's about being as functional as possible throughout our entire lives and avoiding crippling, painful, and lengthy battles with disease. There are many better ways to die and to live. Appreciate you listening. Thanks so much. Please go to speakpipe.com/Deborah Jones to share what you thought about this episode and what you'd like to hear next on Own the Gray. This episode brought to you by Lunch with a Healer podcast. The best conversations happen when you're having lunch with a friend, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair at lunchwithahealer.com.